Welcome. You're listening to the Internet Advisor Podcast with your co-hosts, Gary Baker, Foster Brown, and their team of experts. Since 1998, this program has been helping people like you with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources and programs, and promoting tech businesses in our area. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour radio program heard weekly on WJR 760 AM in Detroit and across the state on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor and to a great show we've got lined up for you. Hi, my name is Foster Brown. We're going to be checking in with Steve Heyer and the winning team from the Robotics First competition that happened this last weekend, where Clarkston and a whole bunch of other young people placed first in the competition, and they're headed for the Nationals. We'll also be looking at the Heartbleed virus, its impact nationally with Rich Steenan, and we're going to have in studio today the director of the people who are bringing business to Michigan. Hello and welcome to the Internet Advisor. Delighted to be back with you folks for 2 hours on Saturday, live here on our flagship station, WJR 760 AM in Detroit, and heard throughout our affiliate networks as well, through Michigan Talk Radio. Delighted to be with all of you folks, and my posse is in the house here. Got Gary Baker. Happy birthday to you.
Yeah, that's enough.
We will be posting the picture of the birthday cake. By the way, haven't updated the homepage yet for this week, but that'll be coming up after the show.
And we'd like to share virtual cake with all of our listening audience.
That's where we will post the virtual cake. It's much less calorific. Yeah, Gary was, by the way, a welcome tax deduction having arrived a month late, but on tax day.
Yeah. But now they'll be able to go back and figure out what year I was born, because it was the year they moved tax due date from March 15th to April 15th.
Let that be a mystery. You can do a little bit of Googling and try to find that out. Also, Eddie Riddell's in-house with us, all banged up from having done some of his car repairs.
All banged up, but you know, I buy bigger bandages now. We're fine.
Yeah. It was funny, as we were coming in, he was talking about the fact that I have a big, very big phone that I'm testing out, the 1520 Nokia. It's a huge one, six inches. It's all slipping around in my hands. And both of us were saying that, and your comment was,
that's a phone?
Oh, we don't have enough oil in our hands in the old days because we burned it off.
Yeah, we burned it off. You know, we wore it off. You know, just age. Yeah. You know, the kids that design these things, they're younger and their grip, I mean, they could climb walls like Spider-Man. You know, we've lost that ability.
Also with us, Cal Carson, speaking of being like Spider-Man, good to have you here.
I'm not really sure which way to go with that one.
You get the tingly sense when things are going on.
Yeah, anyway, things tend to tingle a lot around here.
We're going to have a little later in our program, Richard Steenan, talking about the Heartbleed worm. Not so much, we're going to try to find out what are some of the bigger implications of this thing. It's hit even some of the big government sites. And we're especially looking forward to talking with Mike Finney, who is the head of the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. I have MEDC down here, right. And I was just trying to figure out all the words, all the names to go with. But anyway, the people who really work hard to develop business in Michigan, so I'm looking forward to that. Mike's in studio with us. Right now, however, I'd like to go to Steve Heyer and a group of rather happy people, I understand, out there. Steve, welcome to the Internet Advisor, and congratulations to you and to the Rush team of robotics out there in Clarkston.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I understand you have a few people with you. You've got Cameron Razdar, Carter Zielinski, Matt Pasco, Jennifer Ray, and Derek Joslin are there with you. Which one of those folks is closest to the phone and was a leader on the team?
I'm going to pass you over to Cameron, who's one of our team captains.
Good.
And Cam was in the studio with us a few
weeks
ago.
That's right. Hi, yep. Cameron. How you doing?
Good to hear from you.
Hey, Cameron, tell me about what the experience was like. You were paired up with two other teams, right?
Correct.
Which were those teams? Notre Dame?
Yep, Notre Dame, and then a team called Megatron Oracles.
And they were from where were they from?
From Flint.
From Flint. Okay, so you had the team from Clarkston, Notre Dame, and Flint. You guys, why was it that three teams paired together, are teamed up for this thing?
Yeah, so the way the first games work is that there's alliances of three, and in qualification matches, the teams normally just play randomly, but then then after the qualification matches, based on the, how many points you have, based on how many wins you had, you get to pick your alliance members. So we first picked the team from the Notre Dame prep, and then once it came back around to our turn again, then we picked the team from Flint. And that turned out to be a really great alliance.
Oh, you did, yeah. A winning alliance, I might add. You folks took first place, I understand.
Yep, correct. It's the first time we've ever taken first place at the state championship. So it was really a great experience for our students, for our drive coach, for really everyone in Clarkston, too.
And can we claim any credit for having you on ahead of time, you know, predicting the winner?
I definitely think so. That
you're very kind. You're very kind. You guys did all the work, and it was fun work, right? I mean, you guys had a lot of fun doing this.
Yeah, definitely. It's really a great team-building experience for our students. It's not just about all the competitions, about all the community outreach we do. But, I mean, certainly the competition is a great experience because it's fierce. And really, great. The state championship, the best of the best teams are there.
Hey, could you pass the phone to Jennifer Ray, who's there, too?
Jennifer.
Yeah, Jennifer. Jennifer?
Yeah,
hi. How are you doing, Jennifer?
Good, how are you?
Hey, well, was this how many of these competitions have you been in before?
I've been on the team for 3 years.
Okay.
Our team's been around for 17, so it's been a fun time. I've really enjoyed being a part of it.
But is this your first winning team to be on?
Yes.
Oh, that's fantastic. What was it like being out there when it came down to the final crunch?
I was up in the stands with the rest of our team, and we were all just so excited to be there and to be a finalist and really show all of our hard work off in the finals.
Now, who ran the robots during the competition?
We have a drive team that consists of four people. We have our drive coach, our human player, and then our driver and operator.
Mm-hmm.
And so those positions, they try out for them. And our drive team has, one of our drivers has been around for 4 years. We've been driving a long time, and we have a new student who's new on the drive team. So it's really exciting.
Okay, great. Cal, you had a question.
Yeah, Jennifer, a question. Are you the lone woman there, or is there a lot of other young women there that are also competing?
No, with our team, we have 11 girls on our team.
Ooh.
So we got 3 new girls this year, so it was really exciting. We got them involved, and they seemed to really enjoy it.
No wonder you won.
Hey, now the big competition is coming up in Chicago, am I right now?
It's down in St. Louis.
I beg your pardon, St. Louis. St. Louis is coming up next week, right?
Yep.
And that will be the national competition.
Yeah, there's majority of the teams are from the U.S., but there's also some from Canada, Mexico, and some other countries.
So this is the world competition.
World competition, at least this hemisphere. Well, listen, we want to wish you, Jennifer Ray, and Cameron, and Carter Zielinski, and Matt Pasco, Derek Joslin, and Steve Heyer, who's back in the bleachers there as well, with much success in this competition coming up. And we want to hear from you after that happens as well. Take care. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. By the way, our homepage, internetadvisor.net, is normally the place that I would direct you to see all these show notes for the program today. Unfortunately, I did not have a chance to get to it this week before the show, but that means we'll be posting all sorts of good information that we get during the show after this, and I will just formally introduce our guest for this segment, who is somebody we had in quite a bit on our program as our international security expert, and that's Richard Steeden. Richard, welcome to the program again.
Thank you, Foster. Good to be here.
As always, good to have you online. And I have to say, and one of the things I'm hoping to be able to connect our folks with a link on our homepage, I listened to the webinar that you put on yesterday, I believe it was, a rather interesting one in which you had a pretty, I have to say, high-level discussion with somebody from Deloitte Touche, if I'm not wrong. Am I right?
Yeah, Lance James. He's the head of their cyber intelligence group now.
Yeah,
and no more Touche. Just Deloitte.
Oh, just Deloitte now. Yep. Okay, Blake, pardon. Yeah, I did some work for them when they were Deloitte Touche. That's what wrong in my mind. Anyway, Richard, the key thing you talked about there was about the Heartbleed worm that has been out there now for 2 years. There's been a lot in the press. And folks, we're not going to try to go into a lot of the technical stuff that these folks did talk about before. What I want to look at, though, are some of the impact that it's had on us as users of the Internet. Let me just dive into a question that I saw on another blog recently, and the question was put up was, are passwords outdated and insecure? And has Heartbleed kind of shown us this?
Yeah, and, you know, we've all had that experience of some major site that we use being compromised and all of the usernames and passwords published, you know, even if it's just the hashes, and we're all warned to change our passwords for everything.
Yes.
And Heartbleed is going to be like that in spades, and just exponentially worse, because it'll allow all these different sites to be hacked into and quite a few passwords. Not, you know, it's not easy to grab all the passwords, but it's possible.
Yeah.
So we're going to start getting warnings to change our passwords to everything once again.
Yeah.
And one of the things that bothers me is you might go change a password, you know, if you're not picking great passwords, you might, you know, use a little mnemonic that's pretty similar for every site. You might go and change a password at a site that has yet to be patched.
Ah, now that seems to be the Achilles heel. And the big difference in all of these is it's not one site. Like, for instance, during this week, what was it? Oh, Michaels. Michaels, the shop where you go to get a home decoration. They got hit and got, I think, 3 million of their passwords stolen. But that's an instance there. But hang on.
I don't know. You're saying 3 million.
Yeah. Well, that was what was in the news. That's all I know.
No.
That's what's all reported.
3 million users. I believe what happens is that once they find a vulnerable site, they keep on attacking. And only people that logged in within that time frame of the attack are vulnerable.
And what I was trying to say was that's one site. What's happened with Heartbleed, and Richard, correct me if I'm wrong, is that the servers are getting hit with this thing. This is at a server level. Am I wrong on that, too?
Right. No, so you're absolutely right.
So it's only the companies that have used OpenSSL.
Yes, exactly.
Right? So a lot of companies don't do that, right?
Yes, right,
so
Rich.
There's a lot of companies that this doesn't affect at all.
Like Microsoft and
a bunch of companies than not are not affected, right? Mm-hmm. The companies that are using this open source SSL and open certificate, right? And those are the people that are affected. And it's only now this vulnerability's been around for 2 years and nobody knew it, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Why is it, Richard?
Make sure that we tell the right story here. Could you tell us what this is?
Yeah, so it, very simply, there's a capability built into OpenSSL, the thing that 16% of websites, according to Netcraft, use for
16%.
For establishing an encryption session. And somebody 2 years ago, a German programmer, built in a little thing that you could use for kind of a heartbeat, a keep alive, where the browser keeps asking the server if it's still there kind of thing. And not everybody even implements that.
Right.
You don't really need it.
So it's less than 16. Yep.
And it turns out that they did do some, you know, checking. And you can ask, not only do you ask it if it's alive, please send me an answer, but you tell it the length of answer you want. And if you tell it a really big answer that you want, like 64K, it'll give you that much out of memory. And so it's a crapshoot whether or not it'll give you anything critical. But quite often it could give you the credentials for the website. And then the entire web server is vulnerable and the attackers could get in and take everything.
So what really happens, Richard, is that if you have a site that you haven't been to in a while, right, don't go to it until it's patched, and when you do go to it, you know, is it a good idea to change your password? Absolutely, it's a good idea to change your password.
Yeah.
But if your password isn't in memory, it can't pull it. It can only pull out of that server what's in memory.
Mm-hmm. But the question I have for you, Gary, you said don't go to it until it's patched. How do you know as the average consumer when it's patched?
Are there tools out there?
That is a trick.
Yeah, are there tools out there, Richard, that we could use to check and see if a site we're going to has been patched before we go to it?
Yeah, tons of them. I'll send you a link to post.
Excellent.
A good tool
Thank
you.
You
can trust. Right?
Okay, good. Well, we'll be posting that a little later on after the show. So, folks, that'll be in our show notes that you can then look at that and then.
Yeah. So I've had people say, "Oh my God, I better go change all my passwords." I'm going, "No! Don't do that till you know it's been patched, right?"
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Right.
So I just want to make sure that we don't scare people unnecessarily. This isn't good. There's no doubt about it. This is not good. But we don't know if any password information has been taken. Mm-hmm. It's whatever's in memory. And by the way, this little heartbeat, they have to come back with so much memory. So you might ask it instead of, you know, a very small amount, which is what was intended, you might ask for it to come back with, like Richard said, 64K of whatever. And whatever it is, you know, now the hacker gets that, right? But it might not.
I did hear a story.
It might not contain any password information.
I did hear a story, however, guys, of one one hacker who did that on a repeated basis and was able to gain enough information that they were able to get into the system and then get into root in some places.
Right.
That's bad. But
right?
this was a persistent hacker who did. Richard, I have a question for you. You studied this. You've looked at international security. You've spoken on this all over the world. How did this stay missed for 2 years, or did it?
Yeah, whether or not it stayed missed for 2 years is a question.
Yeah,
because
we know
right. that intelligence agencies, if they find a juicy vulnerability like this, will keep it to themselves. But the evidence that anybody has used it hasn't really come up yet. There's been a couple little inklings, but somebody would have to have recorded network traffic on the outside of their web server in order to detect that this has been happening, because you can't see it in the web server logs. But I'm sure there are a lot of researchers digging into their logs right now.
Yeah, trying to.
You know, and the
out.
First thing I think of is all these white hats where they say, proof of concept, come here, break into our system, we'll pay you $1 million if you're successful. I'd save this little goodie in my back pocket until I got another chance where someone was offering up another competition, and then I would, bam, I'd collect my $1 million.
We've seen a lot of activity, haven't we, from the hacker community once it was released that this was there?
Yeah, the hacking community started publishing vulnerable sites, doing everything they could. The most interesting activity was just released by a company called Mandiant, who, of course, is kind of famous for looking at nation-state attacks, Chinese attacks against their customers, who are usually governments and defense contractors. And on the 8th of April, so day after this vulnerability was announced, they saw attackers breaking into VPN concentrators and stealing credentials.
Wow.
Using this technique.
Yeah.
So definitely out there being used by the bad guys. Yeah.
So there's a patch if you want to patch this.
Mm-hmm.
For if you have a server that's running OpenSSL, you can patch it quite easily. So companies, now there are big companies that have lots of servers, and that's really the problem, right?
Yeah, right.
Takes a while to get through them all. Isn't that right, Richard?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and then the next phase of this will be all the places, as with all new vulnerabilities, all the places we had no idea that OpenSSL was running. So we'll find out people were connecting to power stations and pumping stations, and probably somebody had the bright idea of adding security to the smart grid so your home power meter could be using it. So we'll discover that over the next few weeks.
Yeah, but most companies like that, they're not using that open source, that free version, right?
No. Now, Richard, by the way, we'll post your webinar and also those links again. Thanks so much for being with us, Rich. Well, Mr. Birthday Boy, Gary Baker, you know that over these 16-plus years that we've been on here, that a big emphasis for us here at the Internet Advisor, along with helping people get on the Internet and get around it, is development of business here in our state of Michigan.
Pardon us,
but we're very pro-Michigan in that sense.
And before we proceed, because we're pro-business and we want people to have a good business experience, I just wanted to follow up what we were talking about about Michaels. And if you will go to michaels.com, they have at the very top of their page, they have a line explaining everything about what happened with that particular incident. There's a letter from the CEO that explains what was exposed, what they've done to take steps to make things better. And anytime you have a company that has that type of problem, 9 times out of 10, if you go to their website, they'll have information explaining exactly what happened with that.
Cal, if you send me that link, I'll make sure that that's on our show notes as well.
And it wasn't as bad as everybody thought, right?
It appears that it wasn't. I didn't read the entire letter, but it appears that it wasn't as bad as it may have sounded.
Well, one of the things, we introduce somebody who's been sitting here in the studio with us kind of quietly, Mike Finney, who is the head of MEDC, Michigan Economic Development Commission. Am I right on that? Did I get the right C in that?
Corporation.
Here we go. You folks have been around for how long now, developing and promoting business in our fair state of Michigan?
You know, MEDC is probably the third iteration of economic development here in the state of Michigan. At one point, there was the Department of Commerce back in, I think, Governor Blanchard's time. Then came the Jobs Commission during Governor Engler, and then Engler also transitioned to the MEDC. So we've been around for quite a while.
And you've got a threefold target that you have in terms of your goals. Let's hear about those three.
Yeah, we have three major areas of emphasis. We often are identified as the organization responsible for assisting companies with job creation. But in order to do that, there's some fundamental things that must be a part of our portfolio. And those are our assistants with access to talent. That's probably the hottest thing going right now. When we talk to companies, talent is the new currency in economic development. You've got to have talent.
And Mike, what really is happening here is that for a long time, there were so many people and not enough jobs. And right now, there are way more jobs than we have people to fill them. Isn't that right?
Well, if you went to our website, mitalent.org, we have a special talent website. You would find that there's probably 70,000 jobs that are available right now. And it's everything from machinists to welders to engineers and IT and software professionals and everything in between. So there clearly are a lot of jobs available in the state of Michigan right now. And so this idea of ensuring that we have the talent available to support businesses' needs is an essential element of our work right now in economic development.
Just a little footnote on this. Do we have talent that is really capable of stepping into maybe some of these newer age kind of jobs?
Well, I think you just hit on one of the key points. While, you know, we still have a lot of people unemployed in the state of Michigan, far more than 70,000. So essentially, if we had 70,000 people that were qualified to fill the jobs that are currently available on just our website, it would be an easy match. But there really is a talent mismatch where essentially, you know, the skills that are needed to fill some of these, you know, complex jobs that exist in our manufacturing sector in particular, the skills are simply not there. And a lot of it has to do with how, you know, our educational systems have evolved over the years. And that's everything from K through 20. They've evolved. Mm-hmm. And so we no longer emphasize, for example, vocational and technical education like we did back in the early 70s when I was in high school.
The governor last week spoke very eloquently to that and to a program, I think, that's being established to promote that now in the state of Michigan.
Yeah, Governor Snyder has been a real champion of us addressing this problem, and we have a few initiatives. The one that I think he described last week was the Michigan Advanced Technician Training Program, or MAT Squared, as we like to call it. And it's modeled after the dual education system in Germany. It's where we really discovered it at, although there are some efforts here in the state that are very, very similar. In fact, over in the Grand Rapids region, there's a program called AMP, which is the Advanced Manufacturing Partnership, that looks a lot like MAT Squared, where essentially, you know, businesses are being very proactive in setting up co-ops with students and assisting them with their tuition, having them work part-time and go to school part-time as a way of really developing these higher-level skills that are needed.
And that's the key, to develop those higher-level skills and to get the people maybe who are unemployed also to a place where they can learn those skills and gear up for it when they're working at the plant. So this talent, really key thing. Then capital as well,
right,
the money.
So capital is the second biggest question that we get when we talk to business, especially small and medium-sized companies. So we've got some really interesting tools that were designed to address the capital gaps that companies experience. The one that's most active among all the things that we do is what we call the State Small Business Credit Initiative. It's a partnership with U.S. Treasury. We have a pool of about $100 million. It's a combination of federal money and state money, about $80 million of it's federal, $20 million state dollars. And basically, we make loans to companies, but we do it in partnership with banking institutions. And our money really fills gaps in either collateral or we participate in loans where the bank underwriting is not sufficient to support the entire indebtedness. Mm-hmm. And so we will step in and participate in the loan to cover, you know, the collateral gap or the shortcomings in underwriting.
How important is that to developing business here in our state of Michigan?
Well, it's critical, and especially over the last half a dozen years or so. I mean, access to capital by small businesses has been pretty difficult to get. And so a lot of companies literally were struggling and dying for lack of the resources they needed to fill orders.
Are we hearing that venture capital is really kind of – I'm seeing news statements that are the venture capital is coming into Michigan in ways that it hasn't in the past.
Well, yes. Yeah, so venture capital is another one of the tools that we use. So the State Small Business Credit Initiative is about debt. Mm-hmm. We do have a robust venture capital effort underway also. I remember when I first joined MEDC back in 2000, the first time I was with them, we had a handful of venture capitalists in the state and maybe a few hundred million dollars of available capital. Now we have, I think, 33 and several billion dollars of venture capital available in the state, and that's important.
Well, you know, I got to ask a question, Mike, and I hear the term small business a lot, but then I think of the guy that's, you know, trying to start a new business or the new startup or something like that. How do you determine what a small business is that would fall in the range of the services that you're talking about?
Well, for purposes of programs like the State Small Business Credit Initiative, we use the definition that is available to us from the SBA, the Small Business Administration. And so that essentially picks up 95% or more of the businesses in the state of Michigan. So you've got to be pretty large. I think it requires you to have, you know, more than 300 or 400 employees.
Yeah, it's 500.
500 employees. So if you're less than 500 employees, chances are you would qualify for the various programs that we have. And they're very active. We have, under the State Small Business Credit Initiative, for example, we deal with very small loans, as little as a few thousand dollars, but we have a maximum amount that we can lend up to $5 million where a company is looking for large amounts of debt. So, and it's everything in between.
So what is the best place for someone who's a small business that wants to take advantage of this, where they can learn to get the information they need to prepare themselves properly before they come to apply to you?
Well, for the most part, if it's debt you're looking for, you should meet with your current banking partner. If you have a bank, and I don't know a business that doesn't have a bank, your current banking partner are likely to be doing business with us already. We work with, I think, more than 40 banks throughout the state of Michigan and some outside the state who help us put together debt facilities for companies of all sizes and all types. So start with your bank, and if your bank is not familiar with our programs, then get them directly in touch with us, and our team will work directly with them to help put your debt in place.
Let's talk about the last focus, which is your B2B or business-to-business focus. What's that about?
Yeah, Pure Michigan Business Connect is probably the coolest program that I've come across in economic development. I say that because we were the innovators around it. But basically what we're doing is we're just facilitating B2B connections. And I spent most of my career in the business world. And I'd say the majority of the new business we got was based on referrals.
Yep.
So what we're doing is creating an environment where we refer businesses to each other.
Excellent.
Based on intelligence we have as we're out talking to them. We understand where they have needs and where a Michigan company.
You're a matchmaker. The Yenta.
Exactly.
Michigan, yeah, for business. And, That's pretty good.
And the good news about this, Foster, is that this program started up brand new about 2.5 years ago.
Mm.
Our kickoff partners were DTE Energy and Consumers Energy, and we give them a lot of appreciation for helping us with the kickoff. But we're now at a point where over a couple years, the program is up to about $1.6 billion of B2B facilitated activity.
Wow.
And it's everything from baked goods to production requirements for manufacturing operations, you name it. Virtually
wonderful.
Any kind of company can participate.
We're talking about Michael Finney, who is the president and CEO of the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, or MEDC, as you heard us talking about it. I've got to ask you, but when I went to look for more information about MEDC, it took me to Pure Michigan. That's the name of the page there. So I got to straighten me out now. Is Pure Michigan part of MEDC or the other way around?
Well, Pure Michigan had been traditionally used for a few years before Governor Snyder was elected as a tourism brand.
Yes.
The reality is it's an incredible brand, so we decided to extend it not just to tourism but also to business marketing. And so a lot of what you see coming out of the MEDC now will be under that Pure Michigan brand, whether it's tourism or business or talent or anything else. And it really helps us as we go to market the value proposition that Michigan has to offer for talent, for businesses, et cetera.
And when you really think about it, when you're attracting business, you're attracting people. And, it's the same thing because people want to live where they can play and enjoy the attributes that we all enjoy here in Michigan.
I hear that so often. I hear that so often in business. There's lots more to talk with you about movie industry and everything else. Can you hang on? Because an old friend of yours, Mike Brennan, is coming up in just a minute. We'd like to have you get a chance to chat with him as well about West Michigan, where he's very proud of things that are going on. So Mike Brennan and the MI Tech News segment is coming up in just a moment. That's where we hear headlines about what's going on in and around our state of Michigan. And it's time for MI Tech News. That's Michigan Technology News. And the man who is the editor of that is Mr. Mike Brennan. Mike, welcome to our show here again.
Thanks, Foster. A beautiful day here in West Michigan. And welcome, Mr. Finney.
Go ahead and say it, Mike. Yeah.
Good morning or good afternoon, Mike. Good hearing from you.
Yeah, you too. I was listening to the segment waiting for get queued up here, so I was listening to what you had to say. So.
Well, we're going to give you a chance to chat a little bit after we talk about your headlines for this week. MITechNews.com, by the way, folks, is delivered every day, every Friday, and it's a series of headlines that talks about things that are going on in the state of Michigan. It talks about things that are going on around the country, and particularly it focuses on entrepreneurship and business. So it's a great resource for people who are developing businesses in the state of Michigan or are thinking about doing that kind of thing, and it's absolutely free, and you can register for that. You can sign up for that by simply going to internetadvisor.net, scrolling down the page and clicking on that subscribe now button. Let's talk about some of the headlines you've got this week. Mike, there's one I saw there about the EPA wanting to expand government control of U.S. waters, and that's not quite a good idea, I think. according
well,
to
Well, our friends at Warner Norcross and Judd issued an opinion on this, and on March 25th, the EPA Army Corps of Engineers proposed a new rule that would redefine what the waters of the United States mean. And so our the attorneys think that that's not, it's going to expand government reach. It's going to cause regulatory headaches for property owners and businesses. I mean, it's a good thing, bad thing. The environmental side thinks it's great that we have better control over the state's waters, but business side, they're not so happy about it.
So it's going to be a battleground, at least, as people go back and forth controlling whose interest, best interest is at stake here. You've got something down there. As a matter of fact, we've been talking about job seeking and with Mike Finney, but you've got an article there about a job fair coming April the 30th to Ford Field in Detroit.
Yeah, well, actually, this is, if you look at the article, there's a certain Michael Finney that's quoted in there.
Aha!
this is his baby. But they're going to have 1,200 jobs available in the Pure Michigan Dream Job, symposium, which will be held in June, but you have to register by April 30th. Is that right, Michael?
Yeah, I think that is correct, Michael.
Oh, okay. So you have to register, and you, again, do it online?
Right. Yeah, everything's available online at mitalent.org. You can go there and register for the Dream Job program.
Okay. Well, make sure that people see that on our show notes after the show. We'll make sure we post that as well, Mike. One final thing here. Wright Museum is going to be hosting a RoboFest coming up on this
apparently. Well, actually, today.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. Going on today, huh?
It's going on today, yeah. And it's for high school kids. It's to get them a chance to build these autonomous robots,
right,
which are computer programmed to act independently, and they're not controlled. You know, it's kind of like those bad Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, but not that bad.
Not that bad.
So.
Yeah, we were talking earlier on today with Steve Heyer and the Rush team that competed in FIRST Robotics, along with a team from Flint and a team from Notre Dame, and won the state competition for the first time, FIRST Robotics. And they're going to St. Louis, Missouri next week to compete in the national, or I should say the Northern Hemisphere competition. So it's a big thing. By the way, we should mention, folks, that you can again sign up to get these headlines and many, many more so that you're right on time for these events. And with all the details included, there's a big list of headlines that you get every week at mitechnews.com. How do you get it? You simply go to our page, internetadvisor.net, scroll down to the subscribe now button. It's free and it gets right to you every Friday, and you'll get to see all these headlines plus many, many more. One thing, Mike, just to kind of wrap up here, I saw that a headline about wearable market. The wearable.
Yeah, that's really taken off.
Yeah, wow.
It's going to be 19 million units sold in 2014. I might add that I have the Sony wearable watch, so I have the Dick Tracy watch that's synced up to my Android phone. It's kind of cool. I like it, but I'm an old Dick Tracy fan.
That's cool. But, it should be, they're saying Apple might, that might be one of Apple's big things this June when they come up.
Oh, absolutely. Everybody's headed that way because it's really convenient. You know, you've got Google Glass, you've got the wearable watches, all sorts of things. But by 2018, they're predicting that they'll be selling more than 111 million units a year. So everybody's going this way. It's synced in with, you know, your mobile phone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we won't be able to go anywhere that somebody won't be able to track us, right?
So. Or sell us something. Good grief. Let's get back to talk a little bit about things in Western Michigan. Mike Finney is here, as I said before, from MEDC, and that's the Michigan
Economic Development
Corporation. I just have those darn, I have the darn MEDC in front of me. I didn't get the old words out. Mike, let's talk a little bit about, you've worked with Mike now on a number of these events that you're going on. Like, for instance, you're talking about the Job Fest that's coming up. What are the kind of things that you see going on in Western Michigan in particular? Maybe you can talk about that with Mike.
Well, the west side of the state is very vibrant right now. In fact, I was over in the Holland Grand Rapids area a couple days ago meeting with a group of business executives who represent Talent 2025. And I was just amazed at all the exciting things that's going on over there. The business community is very robust. We've had a lot of business growth activity there. But they're also being very proactive in terms of the talent initiative. So, and that includes the entire west side of the state. We're very excited about what's happening there.
Mike Brennan, you talked about this too. There's kind of an arc that goes along one of our major expressways that kind of is an arc of business that's going on. If you include the University of Michigan as well, it's tied with businesses and universities.
Well, yeah, it's Kalamazoo, Grand Rapids, and then if you just come back across the state along I-94, I-96, you come right back into Detroit. And then you go north up to 69. I mean, there's just an awful lot of manufacturing activity, a lot of technology growth and activity happening. And our communities are starting to have some pretty positive impact in terms of the community revitalization as well.
Yeah, Mike, you've been reporting on that a long time, Mike Brennan.
A long time, and Michael and I go way back. I go back to his first tour of duty at the MEDC when he worked for John Engler, so way back when.
He was recruited.
One of the things I wanted to ask you, Michael, I'm going to put you on the hot seat a little bit since we're on live radio. I know you work real hard with the legislature to make the state more entrepreneur-friendly, but if you could do anything and you could get the legislature to go along with it, what would you change or add or whatever?
Well, the legislature has been very supportive of the efforts that we have underway. If you just look at the last 3 years, and I'm thinking about our 15 budget that's now being considered, the governor and the legislature has been very supportive of our activities. And so we just need to continue to innovate around the programs that we have, and we need to make sure that we continue to talk to the business community, whether they're entrepreneurs or established companies, and then be responsive to their needs. And it's a moving target. You know, the things and programs that we needed 3 years ago are different from the programs we need now. Talent wasn't as hot a commodity as it is today.
Mm.
Access to capital has become slightly less of a commodity than it was a couple years ago. So it's a moving target, and we just need to be responsive, and we appreciate the support that we get from the governor and from the legislature.
All right, cool.
Well, I'm just curious. I know that initially, talking about the Holy Grail, or at least for me, the bellwether of this, and maybe it was because the press picked it up, was about 3-4 years ago with the movie industry. And they're coming in and incentives to them and kind of the battle over the incentives. Where are we now with that?
Well, we're actually still supporting the film industry. Our current budget is about $50 million. That's what it's been for the last 2 years. That's different from the program that was in place under Governor Granholm, where essentially it was an open-ended, I think 30 or 40% of the total production cost could be given as a refund.
So 42%.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's right now we have a maximum budget of $50 million, and the program is very active. We've got major productions that have happened, Superman, Batman, those kind of things that are happening, and they're happening throughout the state. So it's a good program. We also measure the return that we get on the film program, just like we do everything else that we have in the state. And the good news is we're seeing some very positive movement in terms of the return that we get on the film program. So it's another tool. It's an important piece of our overall Pure Michigan branding. And we're doing everything we can to continue supporting it.
One last thing for you. Looking at the Upper Peninsula, or Upper Lower Peninsula, and then the Upper Peninsula. We've talked a lot about the development that goes on in that golden arc below it. But how about those other areas? What's the development going on there?
Well, you know, I think we need to make sure that we're leveraging our universities that we have in the UP. We've got Northern Michigan, Michigan Tech, and Lake Superior. Michigan Tech, in particular, has been extremely active in developing, startup companies and in the technology space. And so we see a lot of opportunity for that in the Upper Peninsula.
Great. Mike Finney, thank you very much. And Mike Brennan, thank you for being with us. And folks, stay tuned because the next hour is yours.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at www.internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, plus other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage and send us an email with the details. Don't forget to look for us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor. Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, your co-host here, along with Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson. Lots of experience in studio here to answer your question. Yes, that's what this second hour of our live program is all about. You get to call 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-WJR. Call us, please, and we will get down to answering your questions. Simple or complex, we'd love to do it, and you have no idea how many people you're helping. We're glad to be back here on the radio live on WJR. We'll be here during this late spring and through the summer. And every Saturday from 4 to 6, God willing, and the creek don't rise.
My God, I have to say a woohoo to that, because I tell you, It's nothing like being live.
Live versus being dead, of course.
Yes.
In any case, now, Cal, you got a couple things coming up that you wanted to shamelessly plug.
Shameless plug number one. Of course, every month we have the Mac Group meeting over in at the Birmingham Temple over in Farmington Hills, Michigan. And this month we're going to talk about how to watch TV on your Mac and iOS devices.
That, for cord cutters, that's where I want to go.
Yep.
That is, I am doing so much more of that. Excellent.
In addition to that, we're also going to have some friends in from Crash Plan that's going to talk about doing cloud backups as well.
Now, that was one of the other things I want to talk to you about, because my subscription to Carbonite is running out. And frankly, I'm a little fed up with some of the things about Carbonite. So that would be something I want to, I'm going to see if I can be there, get permission from my wife.
Next Sunday on the 27th. It's
3 p.m.
3 p.m. If you come at 2, you get to take advantage of our genius
table. Get it early. Okay.
And you can bring in all sorts of questions. Everyone is welcome. You don't have to have a Mac to come to the meeting.
Oh, wonderful. And I think your first meeting is free, right?
Yes, always.
And then after that, how much is it to belong or to?
Well, it starts off with a membership of $35 a year, and it can go up to a lifetime membership if you want to pay one flat rate.
Okay, good. All right. Your second plug, your second shameless plug?
Well, my second shameless plug is more me than anything else. I belong to the Rosedale Community Players, and we're having our third play of the season, and that one will be titled Superior Donuts. It's by Tracy Letts, and it's a drama and comedy mixed together about a donut shop in Chicago in the year 2000 and some of the things that are going on in
it. Sounds like fun.
Oh, it's going to be fun. They actually talked me into being in it, and when they said donuts, I said,
I'm there all day.
Yeah, so I get to play a cop, so that means donuts are going to be a natural.
I knew that had to be in there somewhere, right?
So if they go to RosedaleCommunityPlayers.com, you can order your tickets online, and we'll be doing that for 3 weekends, starting with the 25th.
Cal is our Easter ham. That's what he's doing here.
Hey, guys. Oh, yes, all pork.
We have a caller on the line with us, John from Oxford, who also wrote us an email before the program, and he's got a special question about some data that he has and ways of storing it. John, thank you so much for joining us.
How are you guys doing today?
Good. Now, you have some big, I mean big with the capital B, spreadsheets, right?
That's correct.
Okay, and here's what's your question in particular?
Well, really what I'm looking to do is find out what the next step for me would be beyond Excel in order to program them into a different type of a format that might be a little more reliable and a little more user-friendly.
Okay.
So, John, what are you doing with these spreadsheets?
They're basically visual manufacturing templates. So, in other words, you're scheduling production in real time, reporting results in real time, that type of thing.
Okay. And you're using them for a client or for yourself?
Yeah, well, okay. For small manufacturers.
Okay. And you've been doing this for a while.
Mm-hmm.
What version of Excel are you using?
Right now I'm using 7.
Okay.
Okay,
it's a 64-bit version.
Okay, okay.
Is this something that you do over a network, or is it something on a standalone machine?
No, well, you can do it on a standalone machine, but I suppose if you had a network, you could do it.
Okay, because my first thought was this, and after reading the question, number one, I would think that if you want to go to the next step, it seems like, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, you've pushed Excel to its very limit at this particular point. And I think probably you should consider doing a database program as opposed to doing a spreadsheet program. My natural thought would be go from Excel to Microsoft Access, which will probably import a lot of those sheets and some of the macros that will go along with it. The other side of the coin is, do you know anything about Microsoft Access? And if you don't, I would probably recommend you taking a look at a place like New Horizons Computer Center,
and
maybe taking a course out there and see whether or not that's something that's going to work for you.
Okay.
Ed, do you have any thoughts on handling this?
No, you know, I get a lot of bad mouthing about using Microsoft Access from a lot of people. And and they use what's the preferred template now? Is it like SQL, Gary?
Yeah, I would use SQL if you're going to have more than one person use it at a time, right?
Right.
And that's the problem with Access. It's a great little database, but it's a little personal database. If you're really going to use this for you know, a couple of different people, somebody in the head office, somebody out in the shop, you probably wanted to take a step, jump over Access and use SQL.
Okay.
So SQL will be an alternative
right. Now
too.
It costs a little bit more, but not, you know, not a lot more.
Now, who makes? I'm sorry, Gary, I don't know this. Who makes SQL?
It's SQL all Microsoft.
It is also Microsoft. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times when you take the courses, they give you a free 1 year student subscription.
Yes. And actually, if you get a developer version, you'll get access and you'll get a SQL Server with the developer license as well.
Yeah.
And the other thing about New Horizons that you might be able to do, because they used to do this back in the olden days, back when they used to invent software, if you call them, they may allow you to sit in on a class as opposed to actually having to sign up for it, maybe one or two sessions. That'll give you an idea of where you need to go.
Okay, very good.
All right. So there's some ideas for you, John. I hope that they prove helpful.
Stay in touch with us, too.
Yeah. We're going to try to get some of the people in from New Horizons. As a matter of fact, we're scheduling a little later on this month, the beginning of next, the head of New Horizons. So we can talk about them as a place to go if you get this kind of training. And so a great plug for them as well. Here's a plug for you. Our phone number, 800-859-0957, is open for your question. And thank you very much for being here with us. If by the way, you've just kind of strolled by and suddenly ran into this program called the Internet Advisor, yeah, during the spring and summer months, we are here live every Saturday from 4 to 6, and we have a whole host of people in studio to help answer your questions. That's what Hour 2 is dedicated to. And the number to get in touch with us is 800-859-0957. Toll free, 800-859-0957. WJR. That's the way you get hold of us. And please don't feel that you've got to have some really complicated question or that your question is too simple. Very often, that's exactly the kind of question that we need to be answering because there's a whole bunch of people out there who need to hear that answer. So again, please do call us at 800-859-0957 right now. I will be here until 6 o'clock today to answer your questions. And, Andy, we'll be getting to you in just a moment. Guys, I'm testing out a Nokia, thanks to AT&T, a Nokia 1520, which is the 6-inch monster phone. Eddie and I were looking at it as I was coming in the car. It's enormous. As a matter of fact, I'll pass it around to the guys in the studio.
Is that what you would call a phablet?
No. I don't think it's a phablet, but it is the biggest of the phones that I've ever handled.
So it's even
bigger.
And
I have gorilla hands, and I still have trouble getting my hands around it.
Is it bigger than the Note?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, okay.
I'm taking it out of my bag to pass it down to Gary so he can see it. And press the button.
All right, I'm going to hold this up to the microphone for the folks at home, okay?
It is as big as his shoe. Yeah.
Well, I brought it up only because in Spanish, I'm bilingual in Spanish, and the word that they use for this is tabléfono. Instead of a tableta or a teléfono, they call it a tabléfono, which I think is a marvelous word.
Nice play on words.
Isn't it? Nice play on words, because that's what it is. It's kind of a tablet, but it's also a phone. And imagine holding that up to your ear to make a call. Unfortunately, one of the comments on it is that the 1520, as cool as it is, I love it for reading. It's good for reading and for watching video kind of things because it's bigger.
It's got a really nice photograph of you and Jenny on it, too.
Yes, so. It does. It's a nice, but its screen size is wonderful. It takes beautiful pictures, by the way. Mm-hmm. Absolutely beautiful pictures with a 20 megapixel camera, which is one of Nokia's strengths.
Well, but, you know, who uses the phone up to their ears? A lot of people still use Bluetooth headpieces.
Yeah.
Most new cars come with Bluetooth integrated into systems.
Right.
So, I mean, how often are we actually talking to people?
To be honest with you, how many calls do you make?
That's true. Texting and
texting is.
I still make quite a few calls.
Do you still make a lot of calls?
I make more calls than I ever do text.
Really? Yeah. It's a reverse for me. I'm getting into the place now where I'm texting far more. Maybe because my kids and my grandchildren are the ones who do that kind of thing. So I don't know. All right. Hey, let's get to our phone calls here. Andy from Livonia is with us. And welcome to the Internet Advisor. Andy, how can we help you?
Thank you. Thank you, Foster.
Certainly.
I called in a couple of weeks ago, and then I sent in an email as to what my problem was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the guy that went from XP to Windows 7, and
yep.
I have a program in XP that I can't access from Windows. From Windows 7, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So I sent in my problem, and I was wondering, was there any solution to this?
Well, there's a couple.
So,
go ahead.
What Do you know that the company that's making the program has decided just not to make it compatible with Windows 7?
I've called them, yes, and I said, just too bad, you know.
That's strange.
So they just wanted to go out of business? What's the...
Good question. I don't know. They gave me some other alternative, but it's a different program altogether. You know, that's okay, except that I've got a lot of data that I got stored, it's a problem. I heard you saying, first of all, if there's a solution, but I remember you saying that there's an emulator.
Yes, it's I think it's called a compatibility mode, and Ed, you can speak to that better than I can.
Yeah, but most of these programs rely on the fact that, have you got the original installation media and setup?
I don't.
You don't.
So, I do not.
So it's going to be difficult to copy it over. I mean, unless this is a program where you can just drag the folder that contains the program, you know, the executables, and drag it to another computer. I mean, as an example, if you had a USB drive and you grabbed the location where this executable was and then you ran it, I mean, do you have the ability to run it from the flash drive? If the answer is yes, then it'll probably work on Windows 7. But you need the original setup because it not only copies the program data in a folder called program files, but it modifies the Windows registry. Files.
Okay, so would he have to find the .exe?
No, he needs to find the setup.
He needs the installation
disk. The installation disk or the CD.
So maybe the company that made this 4XP can somehow give you or very cheaply allow you to get the setup disk for the XP. And if they did have that, what could he do with it?
Well, then if you could find the original installation CD for this program or floppies or whatever it was, then Windows 7 does provide the ability to run what's known as the troubleshooter. So you can basically right mouse click on the program that you would use to install the program and say run the Windows installation troubleshooter. Or compatibility settings. Or run in compatibility mode. There are three different ways that you can do this.
I got you. Okay, so three different ways it shows. So if you went to, for instance, in Windows 7,
they all rely on you having the original installation media.
Okay, that's the
bummer. Now, there were companies back when Windows XP and Windows Vista came out where they were saying, we'll copy the programs over for you. You know, and we'll find out all those dependent programs. We'll root out where the Windows settings and the registry settings and all the files that were copied.
I'm wondering if you've Andy, have you ever gone on and Googled to see if there was any kind of a program or website that would allow you to
download an old copy of the installation?
Yeah, download an old copy of this installation, or find a way of transferring it to so it could be used for Windows 7?
Well, let me tell you, I went on to the Windows website, mm-hmm. and there is a emulator there. There's several programs, apparently, but it's all gobbledygook to me.
Well,
apparently help you to install an emulator. It says
that's true, but listen to this. You mean you can run a Windows XP mode within Windows 7. That's fine. But once you do that, I mean, basically, you're running Windows 7 inside of a window in Windows. You're running Windows XP in a window of Windows 7. So, and it's just like Windows XP. And a lot of people use that when they have old programs that refuse to work on Vista.
But do you still need the install disk?
But you still need the install disk. Or if you happen to have an old DOS program, right?
Yeah.
Which a lot of people did, then it would run there as well. But the key is have you actually taken this, the program and all the executables, and taken them to another computer and then tried to run them, copy them into the identical program or the identical folders from one computer to another. And if it works on another XP system without the installation media, it might work.
I'm going to go against that because I have tried that, and there's so many nuances to it that it's ridiculous.
But 1 out of 10 times it works.
Well, okay, fine. You could try the Ed Rudell method, and it may just work. I'm not saying it's not going to, but Ed is right. You're better off if you can get the installed disk. If you can't get it from the vendor, what I have found in the past to do is I just go out on eBay and search for that software.
Oh, ooh, yeah. Great idea. Yeah. Or Amazon.
Now, wait a minute. When you say installed disk, you mean the installed software that I use to create the data?
I'm talking about the original software that you bought, that you installed on your computer, and then use that software to create the data.
Yep. Yes, I've got that. I've got that disk.
Okay, that's what we've been talking about.
That's what we asked earlier questions. Okay, and my fault, because maybe I didn't make that clear. So there are two options. You can take that media onto a Windows 7 machine, and you can, when you plug it in, when you double-click on it, it'll try. Well, hold on. We'll talk to you after the commercial
break.
But
the key, and I want to make sure, after we talk with him on the break, let's come back to let other people know, because I think this is very important, because there's a lot of people out there with special programs on XP who are not being able to do the same thing.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that when we come back. But we're going to put you on hold, okay? And we'll see if we can help you offline with some of those details, so that when we come back, we can share that information with the other people out there. Hey, and we've got also Craig from Shelby, Ohio, waiting for us and you. Let me take a moment just to thank people, as we say, behind the glass, who have been working furiously. Ken Tucker was here with us our first hour. KT, thank you very much for your help behind. Rich Ozinski's here. And Shannon Bailey as well. Thank you very much.
All right. All
of you helping us with the phones and the engineering. We really... Hey, guys, you know what?
Have
you guys, the engineers, do you folks have a copy of that new happiness song somewhere in the library? We're going to see. I love that tune. And I thought maybe we'd go out with that tune. Happiness is... It's a wonderful tune.
Seriously need a webcam in here, because if you just saw these engineers in the glass, it's just...
Yes, yeah.
See, you know, the happiness song, is that the one with the...
We would never do anything like that.
They dance all over the world.
Yeah. Okay. Is that the one that they played on the Oscar?
It's from Despicable Me 2, and it may have been... It's being played everywhere now, because it's such a catchy tune, and it's from the movie Despicable Me 2, originally.
Minions.
But the cool thing is, on YouTube, you can find versions of it that have been shot all over the world. Like, they have people dancing to it, and it's the kind of thing that you can dance... It's lovely. Grandmas and babies and everybody in between can dance to it, because it's just kind of like move your body to a happy beat, and it's really fun. It's called Happiness Is, by Pharrell Williams, I believe, was the original... There we go. That's it, yes. It's just so infectious. The beat is just so infectious. Pardon me, folks. I thought with the springtime, nice weather out, this is kind of a cool song to have, and we'll come in and out of breaks with it. How's that sound? All right,
just
this hour.
Too happy, you know.
It's the sugar, Ed. It's the sugar.
It's the birthday cake. Gary's birthday cake is doing it to me.
That must be it. Of course.
Hey, I hope it gets some of you folks out there inclined to give us a call at 800-859-0957, because it's your turn between now and 6 o'clock. Get your call in here, and we'll get as much help in your way as we possibly can. Hey, guys, from our last caller, any wrap-up thoughts on how to take these special programs that he's been running in Windows XP, a lot of other people facing this, I think, who have not wanted to do, they moved up to Windows 7 or some other program like Vista or maybe Windows 8, and they found it wouldn't work. Eddie, what kind of things can we do?
Well, now that we know that he had the original installation media.
Yeah.
It's a much easier, both Windows 7 and 8 have the ability to run in a compatibility mode where if it fails to install, it will then try to emulate an operating system, you know, or it'll analyze the setup program and try to emulate it to install so that it'll install properly. Sometimes programs fail to install because they do this little samples like, what version of the Windows are you running? And it's looking for XP, and it's looking for XP or 2000 or 98. Mm-hmm. And you say, I'm running Windows 7. It goes, I don't understand that. That means you're running much too old of an operating system for me to run. So Microsoft tricks it into saying, okay, I'm running Windows XP, whatever.
Yeah, right. And in other words, it creates kind of like a virtual machine
That's a technical thing, but it's not quite that, but you're right.
Yes,
yeah, it's
okay.
Virtual.
So it can run. But the key to this, folks, the key to this is having that original install disk for that particular program, which fortunately our caller does have, and therefore will be able to.
And thank goodness it wasn't floppies, yes.
Yeah.
And if you don't, we were kind of saying, well, maybe the manufacturer might have one, but we forgot to tell them go to eBay or go to some place like
Gal came up with that, and that was really good.
Yeah. So,
came up with that answer as well. Okay, hey, let's go on to our next caller, and that is Craig from Shelby. Thank you very much, Shelby, Ohio. Thank you for calling us here on the Internet Advisor, and how may we help you?
Hey, guys, like always, for the last 4 years, you always come through.
All right, thank you.
Well, thanks, Craig.
Yeah, always. And I recommend, no matter where I travel, I recommend that they listen to you either through the airwaves or on the Internet. But anyway, here's what I got.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone into my documents library. I don't want to take too much time.
Okay.
But anything with a www, you know, is a file opening. But mm-hmm. when I get to Adobe, anything I try to open up in Adobe, this is what I get. I'll do it as quick as I can.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you got to explain that part again, because you're saying he's going to My Documents, and anything that starts with www, I didn't quite get
it. No, anything that has Adobe in it, you're having a hard time opening.
Well, I thought he said www.
Exactly. Here's what I got. Okay, Adobe Reader could not open unemployment, but because it is either not supported file type or because the file has been damaged via email attachment or wasn't correctly decoded. I press OK. Nothing happened.
Okay.
So he needs a different, he needs to uninstall Adobe and reinstall it? Or what version of Adobe Reader are you using?
I have no clue.
You know, that's a good point.
That's real simple to find out. If you start up Adobe Reader and you go to Help About Adobe Reader, you go to Help on the menu bar and go down to About Adobe Reader, it will tell you what version.
Now, how
you're
can
running.
He find Adobe on his computer?
Well, I'd look for the big red A.
Well,
but,
on the control panel.
Normally, you do start programs if you're using Windows machine, and then go down the program list, and you'll find Adobe Reader on that list.
What operating system are you running, by the way, Greg?
Seven.
Seven, okay. Then
so here's
precisely what he
here's
said.
Another way. Go to Adobe.com and go to, you know, download Reader and see if you can download the latest version, because if you have the latest version, it will tell you. And if you don't, it will allow you to download the latest version. It's likely that by downloading the latest version, it will fix this problem.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. The troubleshooter in me thinks that, let's see if we could launch it by itself, and if it launches by itself, too, because that'll tell us something as well. But I like Gary's all-in-one solution.
Yeah, it's kind of a simple.
It'll fix it, right?
Yeah. And Adobe Reader is one of the few things on a computer that a lot of people I have noticed don't bother to go through the trouble to update. They just kind of let it sit there, you know, and they're using Adobe 5, and it's 2014, and it's up to Adobe 12.
And that's because Adobe 5 didn't have the auto-update capability, right. which they included, I think, in Adobe.
No. Yeah, because Adobe 5 didn't have the auto-update, because I was going to say I get a notice every other day when they're putting a change in. But apparently Adobe 5 didn't have that, and that may be part of what Kent...
Ann Foster, I think you do what we would recommend, which is it'll come in and it'll default to just install the latest version.
Right.
And we would say don't take the default in this case. Just say, remind me when, mm-hmm. you know, notify me when a new version's available.
Right.
And then you decide when you want to download.
Yep.
So what have you found out?
The other thing, too, is it says Adobe Online Services, and it, you know, convert PDF to Word, Excel, and then it like, tries to sell you something like
Yes.
Yeah,
you know.
So you got to find the free version. Let me see.
Yeah, you know what I would try to do? First of all, I would say take the extra step of going to your program manager, you know, add and remove programs, and then I would remove the Adobe and then go to the Adobe site online and download it. That way, if there's something fouled up in the system, you've cleaned it out, and then you can do that. That would be my extra safe way of doing it, although Gary's way, I think, is probably just as well. But the key is to go to the Adobe site. Cal, were you going to say something?
Gary's way was the...
Simply to go up there and update it.
Well, see, he's trying to go to update it, but they're trying to sell him something.
That's what I'm saying. I beg your pardon. No, I understand.
So, are you saying you went to Adobe.com and they tried to sell you something?
Well, actually, I'm there right now.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But I cannot open any file that's not open a recent file. Can't open it. It says something about if it was sent through email, it was corrupted. And then it gives all the online services on the next, I don't know what you call
okay,
it.
Okay, so what we want to confirm is I like Gary's solution. It is the simplest. So, if you went to www.adobe.com and scroll down on the website, and I think there is a downloads
mm-hmm.
in the gray portion of the screen, and there's a downloads, and there's an Adobe Reader that you can click on.
Right.
And
that was my next question. Mm-hmm. Reader, writer. I mean,
no,
just the reader.
The writer will cost you some money.
Yeah, the writer will cost you. Right.
All right.
And they will always try to any site you go to. There is a business. They're going to try to make you get the reader writer, which will include the cost of doing that. But if you just simply want the reader, you can get that. Okay?
Yeah. I'm not complaining. I'm just asking.
No.
If I got to pay for something that I need, I'll pay it.
But no. You know something? It's worth saying to you that this will happen with a lot of sites.
Yeah, most people don't need the writer.
No.
You want the reader.
And this will happen, for instance, we found with Malwarebytes, our old favorite, Malwarebytes.org. If you go there now, they're going to try to steer you toward their professional version. Fortunately, Ed in our toolkit has got a link to the just the free Malwarebyte, the anti-malware program. If you want the paid one, that's fine. And the logic of this is it's a company that's trying to make some money to keep alive, and the old free model has not worked real well to help them stay alive. Yeah,
and what you want to do probably is there's an optional offer to install McAfee Security. Make sure you uncheck that.
Yes,
default to check.
Very good point.
And this uncheck?
Yeah, uncheck it.
And by the way, this is a word for all of you out there listening to us. When you, from now on, as you're downloading, keep an eye on the screen, because as you go through, it will say something like, and it will have the box checked off already for you,
yep.
Install McAfee Security.
Install Ask Toolbar. Install
ask
Google
Toolbar. Oh, that Ask Toolbar is horrible for all the junk it puts on your
machine. Ask, A-S-K.
A-S-K, thank you.
Wow.
Look at that K out of there.
We have the president of Ask.
We should have learned in class, have we been paying attention?
Right? Well, no, and for instance, we no longer send people to the CNET download site because there is so much stuff that gets there before you even get to your own download. So just be wise, folks, as you do that. Hey, I hope we've helped you. By the way, our forums are back up. So if you want to go into the forums during the week, you can go there. And there's some people that help you there. Take care of yourself. Again, that's going to the InternetAdvisor.net homepage and click on forums, and you'll find a lot of very smart people to help you. Thank you so much for having joined us for our program today, The Internet Advisor. Again, if you just kind of happened by and you aren't a regular listener, we're during the spring and summer session going to be on live on WJR, 760 AM in Detroit. That's our flagship station. We're also on our network, and our affiliates are heard throughout the state through Michigan Talk Network. And we're delighted to have everybody available. But what it means is that you folks who are just kind of cruising by 760 AM on Saturday afternoon happen to run into us, you can get into the conversation here very simply by calling 800-859-0957. And we have still room for like another call in here. So let's get to it. Oh, by the way, on Sunday nights, I put together the podcast and post that online. What you see online right now at InternetAdvisor.net is the program from last weekend. And a little later on today, I'll be posting the website for today with the show notes in it. And then the podcast will be up tomorrow night. That's where you can go and you can listen to either small segments of the program or listen to the entire podcast. Download it during the week for later listening. All right.
Now, did you keep that up for a little extra period of time just because the governor was here last
week? Well, I guess.
Okay,
maybe.
Fine. We're aging the governor, folks.
Very delighted to have had the governor with us last week. He's a big fan of the FIRST Robotics team, and we heard today from Steve Heyer that the team is going to be competing next week in St. Louis.
It's the World Championships.
World Championships, yep,
because
in robotics.
Or international, but I think they call it the World Championships.
Yeah, so it'd be North America, South America. Well, actually North America, because Mexico is considered part of North America, right, as well. Mexico, Canada, and the U.S.
But I think it's called World.
Yep.
Just like the World Series.
And it's going to be a great competition. Good luck to our kids out there. They're doing a great job as well. All right. Oh, by the way, just another quick reminder for you. If you go to InternetAdvisor.net, there's a toolkit there that Ed's created over the years. It's got some great resources in it. And our forums are now back live. Thanks very much to Vince Malewski and the team at VC Web Design that made that possible.
Yeah,
thanks,
great,
guys.
Great company that has helped us out many times over the years.
Many times. All right. Let's go. Hey, Kent, how you doing? This is Kent from Milford. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
Hi. Taking some of those new Horizon courses I heard you talking about.
Yeah.
They're pretty good.
Excellent.
My question is, I've got a lovely wife who spent 6 months putting all my videos that I took of all my kids going to high school and sports onto discs, like DVDs.
Right.
And then she saved it on her computer, and it's 300 gigabytes of data.
Okay.
It's huge. So I don't know how the best way is to save that, whether it should be external or like this Carbonite or whatever you guys are talking about.
Good question. Very good question, guys.
Me, can I answer?
Okay, Cal.
Oh, no, I'm just kidding.
Good question.
I do a lot of video as well, Kent, and I do both. What I would suggest you to do in my humble opinion, because external hard drives are cheap, I would get two, not just one, two of the external hard drives, USB or whatever protocol that's running on that particular computer, copy those files each to each one of those drives, and then I would probably do a subscription to. I use CrashPlan as my backup cloud backup of choice, and then I would just subscribe to them and back it up to there. That way, I'd have it in two different places. I'd take one of the two USB drives, and you could put it away somewhere in the house. The other one I would store somewhere else if those videos are something that's really important to you to keep.
No, really, at a different offsite location like grandma's. And you know, isn't that what you said you do, Gary?
Yeah, I do. Well, I try to do it. I used to try to do it. Now I'm because I never could get it that way, get it done.
You have cloud and storage, basically.
Yeah, the difference in this particular case, Gary, is that what he's doing is not backup. This is archiving.
Right.
So archiving is a one-time shot. Yep. He just takes it and puts it away.
You know, yep. My wife and I did something similar where we took 18 family VHS tapes, converted them to DVD, and then in the process we converted them to AVI. And they just plugged up her computer, and I'm like, I got to get rid of these. And I did the same thing. I put them on an external hard drive, put it in my sock drawer, and the other backup is her laptop. And we took the VHSs and put those over grandma's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ken, if you go to external hard drives, you go to Amazon. I'm an Amazon Prime member, for instance. And let's say a $500 Toshiba external hard drive right now is going for $55.
Oh, wow, that's cheap.
I mean, it's incredibly cheap, and a terabyte isn't much more.
Right.
But I just, matter of fact, took one over to my daughter's house last night, a 500 terabyte.
What a
500
great,
gigabyte.
Great grandpa.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And I used to back up everything to the cloud, but now I'm doing some video of my son's lacrosse games, and mm-hmm. Those are 7 gig, and that's pretty hard to back up each time I use it. So,
excuse me, the 1 terabyte.
For video editing, Gary, on your Surface?
CyberLink is PowerDirector.
Okay.
And I like it. You could use Movie Maker as well, but I think CyberLink, it's got all the PC Best in Class awards.
Okay.
So. And then our other friends over at Micro Center has the Western Digital 1 terabyte USB 3.0 drive for $64.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing goes for the Toshiba at Amazon Online. You can get it for $65.
Yeah, 55 and 60 and double the size.
Yeah, for $10 more, you get twice as much. Yeah, it's because the price of the price of external hard drives right now is ridiculously low, and it's a great time to go shopping. Eddie,
now what we did, after we saved these two, the external drives and the laptops and everything, kids' graduation came up. Oh my gosh, we had to go through those 300 gigabytes and just pick out those little snippets and then put together a 15 little cabage, you know, a collage of these movies so that when people were in the house, we had a video looping for them.
Yep.
Oh, that's kind of cool. That is really kind of cool. Okay, so I hope we helped you out there.
Yeah, it helped a lot. Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks, Ken. Right. Thanks for calling. And we've got Sharon with us from Lansing. How may we help you, Sharon, here on the Internet Advisor?
Well, I'll make it quick because I know you don't have much time.
That's good. Thank you.
I have an iMac, and I just recently did the free upgrade to Mavericks, and I thought everything went fine. But in my Finder window under Devices, it's got 5 or 6 things there, folders. Mm-hmm. And I click on them, and nothing is there. And I went to the Restore, and mm-hmm. in the Restore window, you know, have all these little folders lined up. I don't have any folders lined up.
Mm.
But to make a long story short, what I finally did was I unplugged the computer mm-hmm. and plugged it back in, and mm-hmm. then everything is there.
Ah.
But now every time I do it, it's happening.
It won't
be there. I unplug it, and then the next time it'll be there.
Hmm. Cal?
Well, what I'm going to suggest you do is if you go on your Mac when the folders are there, if you go into Applications and then go to a folder that's called within there that's called Utilities.
Where's the application one?
It's under on your left.
If you double click,
I'm looking, but there's a lot of them there.
They should be in alphabetical order. So I go up to the top of the list.
No, I mean I can't even find the. I have that little bar there, the dock.
Uh huh.
Honey. What we wanted you to do is this: go to your Finder.
Okay, down there on the bar on the dock.
Yeah.
That first little square box with the little face in it. Click on that.
I don't see it.
It's on the left hand side on the very end. Well,
that App Store.
No, you should have the Finder should be on the left in your dock.
Yeah, I've got the Finder. Okay, I'll just look on the Finder page.
That's exactly it.
Right, and when you put that up, you'll find a folder that says Applications.
Only I don't.
You should be able to scroll down. If
It's not there.
If you get on the list view, you should be able to scroll down.
I'm on list view.
Okay, then in that case, then I want you to click on, go up to the top where it says Finder.
Yep.
And I want you to click on Finder Preferences.
Okay, I looked in there.
Where it says New Finder Windows, what does it say there?
It doesn't say New Finder Windows.
Okay, I tell you what, I'm going to catch you on the phone because we're at the end of the show right now, and maybe I can help you out with this, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right,
stand by.
We should mention as well, by the way, Sharon, and for the rest of you Mac users, coming up next weekend, the Mac group, which is one of the biggest Mac user groups in the country, is going to be meeting at the...
If you go to macgroup.org, you can get all the information right there on our webpage. We meet in Farmington Hills, which is right off 696, so it's easy to come down from Lansing, and we'll be there between 2 and 5, and you can come down and we can help you out as well.
And especially if you get there at 2 o'clock, you'll get some personal assistance from very smart people, from very good people up there.
You can even bring your Mac with you if you want to.
And I'm going to do the same thing myself, by the way, hopefully this coming weekend. So thank you very much, folks, for joining us. InternetAdvisor.net is our homepage. Go there for a world of things, and by Sunday night, you'll have our podcast up there as well. Have a great week.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally-produced computer show with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and their team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or to find the show notes for this podcast, visit www.internetadvisor.net and look for us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.